a Rayo Original Podcast.
Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation.
From Greatest Hits Radio.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Yes, hello, come in, take a pew. Welcome along to another episode of your favourite podcast. A podcast that has been proven by science to be...
Wow.
I haven't said what it's claimed, what the claim
no,
is.
No, no, but I'm waiting. Here it comes. Proven by science,
by
do what?
By science to be the most medically...
the most medically... They most use medically, words of that in science, don't
the
they?
The most medically improved...
medically improved
show. Yes.
Show, yep.
To have come out of this particular radio station this week.
Well,
okay. It's also what that boils down to is it's probably the greatest podcast that is available
in
the English language.
We've established that, definitely.
Have we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not medically proven.
Yeah. I think it is. You look at medical science around the world and they're all claiming that this is the best show for you.
You've got nothing better to do than talk about this podcast.
It has health benefits. You can rub it on your chest and all your infections disappear.
Wow.
Oh, excellent. Great news.
It has profound healing qualities.
It cures everything.
I think so.
Big statements.
Yeah. Sister Susie endorses all of these from the pub.
I do indeed.
Yes. Brother Matthew is in his gutter.
Correct.
Sister Holly is lurking inside her tack cupboard.
I'm inside it.
Ooh, inside the tack cupboard, because it's the only way you can protect the precious cargo.
Yes.
That's in there. Coming up, we're going to be stopping at the parish notice board, obviously, for all the latest notices and five-star reviews that Matt likes, because they praise him to the skies.
Correct, yeah.
The not-for-broadcast section and all the confessions that featured this week in the Drive Time show on Greatest Hits Radio, 4 till 7, Monday to Friday, including Professor Pat Pending's wacky races experience, the Fender Bender 500, and on stupid Spanish fairground faux pas, shooting gallery, an accidental chef's confession, qu'est-ce que c'est, fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa. Thank you. First, we're going to start with a backwards confession. Yes, really. I got cat class and I got cat style.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Today's confession comes from Michael. It's a bit of a... This is an interesting one. I think you'll like this, okay? Father Simon, Brother Matthew, and Sister Susie and Holly. For my confession today, I'm going to join two of my passions that I share with the Right Honourable Father Simon. That being cinema and, of course, confessions.
Oh, right, of course, yeah.
I remember renting a video of a film by director Christopher Nolan back in the early 2000s. It starred Guy Pearce in the lead role, an actor who used to be best friend of Kylie and Jason in the days of the late 80s Aussie soap Neighbours. Whilst Kylie and Jason forged their pop careers, Guy went on to hone those Neighbours acting chops. It was his lead role in the film Memento that struck me for its originality. I imagine many listeners might not have seen the film, a lot of will have done, of course. Its main special feature is that it plays out backwards. The first scene that you see in the film is actually the end of the story. The next scene is something that happens half an hour earlier in the story, and it continues, works backwards as the film progresses. Thus, I shall present this confession today in similar backwards time frame in honour of that clever film.
This is ambitious.
No one has ever done this before.
No.
So a backwards confession. Here we go.
Yeah.
So we start at the end. My neighbour, George, was mowing his lawn. It was around 6 p.m. and a sunny late July Sunday evening. We were in the middle of a lovely hot spell. Temperatures had been in the 30s for at least 3 weeks. I got out of my car on the driveway and the two of us were chatting. George was shaking his head, telling me that Mildred, his wife, had been in a foul mood all afternoon. Instead of their usual Sunday evening roast dinner at 5 p.m, he had been given cheese and onion sandwiches. He was a bit baffled by it all. He was pretty sure that he hadn't done anything particularly wrong. Indeed, he felt that his husbandry performances of late had been in rather good form, whatever that means.
Let's not dwell.
No.
Nice.
He'd done the weekly shopping earlier that morning. Oh, there you go.
Oh, right.
He'd taken their daughter to her dance class that afternoon, and now he was out here mowing the lawn. All of this deserved a place in his wife's good books, but to his bafflement, she was barely speaking to him. The mood in the house was not good. In Memento style, we flash back 3 hours to our manly, neighbourly chat. As I was leaving the house, I could hear through the open windows Mildred and her daughter having a bit of a ding-dong next door. With George at the shops, Mildred had been doing her Sunday ritual of giving the house a good clean, something that she did every weekend and something that she did very well. I could hear Mildred raising her voice to her daughter. It's gone. You must have had it. I haven't touched it, Mum, I swear. I bet you have. I bet I haven't. I closed my... Unless it went on like that for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, no. Got it.
I closed my car door, clicked my seatbelt and drove off, leaving them to their discussions. Now we flash back to another hour before that. Mildred and my wife were talking over the garden fence. Mildred was explaining that she'd been preparing dinner, listening to the radio, putting the ironed clothes away and vacuuming the stairs. Classic female multitasking, says Michael.
Okay.
This is the 1950s.
Yep.
Just like she'd done 1,000 times before. Yet this time when she went back into the kitchen, something very bizarre had occurred. And so we come to the final scene, and yet also the very first part of my confession story. It was Sunday morning. I had just showered and come downstairs. I had my list of Sunday chores in my head. I was kneeling, tying my shoelaces. In the corner of my eye, I noticed our cat, Eugene, meowing to me. I looked at him. He looked back, quite pleased with himself, in the way cats do. He'd just entered through the cat flap and had what looked like a flat, punctured brown football beside him. He nudged it towards me with his head. It made me jump a little as I looked up and saw this strange brown blob beside him. This was not usual for Eugene. He would normally bring home a field mouse that he'd caught during his nighttime hunting sessions, but this was considerably bigger than any field mouse. Eugene's gift was laid out for me to inspect. I walked over, a bit sheepishly, to see what it was. This was the hot spell. Everyone had been leaving their windows open, and that morning Eugene had gone out hunting. He'd popped in through the neighbour's window, and there he'd spotted a nice, juicy, brown, cooked chicken.
What?
Sat on the kitchen workshop.
My!
A whole chicken, too good to be left behind. He clearly decided to bring it home as a gift for us, his family. And so the mysterious reason for our neighbour Mildred's foul mood, the reason for her argument with her daughter, the reason for George's cheese and onion sandwiches, Eugene had stolen next door's Sunday roast. I would like to seek forgiveness, Father Simon, for not coming clean to George and Mildred about any of this on that day. It just seems so much simpler to pretend that I didn't know anything at all. Our neighbours had never really been that keen on Eugene, and this wouldn't have helped matters. I'd also like to seek forgiveness, if I may, on behalf of our little hunter-gatherer Eugene, for his chicken-stealing crimes. I'm sure he did it with the best of intentions. I hid the chicken in the outside bin, and we've since moved house, so I feel it's now finally okay.
That's fine.
To come clean. I think you're probably fine after all these years. Very good. A confession told backwards, but it kind of made sense told that way. Very Chris Nolan. What do you say, Susie?
Well, I do give Michael 10 out of 10 points for creativity there because it was good. I like the backwardness of the confession. And I kind of want to say, well, it's not his fault the cat stole the chicken. But apart from the words classic female multitasking, I feel like he just could have said multitasking there. And for that reason, I'm not going to forgive him.
Not forgiven. Okay, thought that's where it was going to go. Yep. But Matthew says...
I'm going to forgive, because as Susie points out, it's the cat's fault. The cat's the one that's going and getting the chicken. How big is this chicken that he's managing to get it through a cat flap? That's not a very big chicken. And how's that feeding three people? I don't think it can. So maybe Mildred needs to think about getting a bigger chicken. And so not to blame there. But the great storytelling there from George and Mildred and Michael and all the rest of
all
them
the others.
And Eugene. Let's not forget him. So for all of those reasons, I'm going to begin.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
So you were very concerned with the size of the chicken there, Matt.
Well, there's no way a chicken could get through a cat
flap.
So
we looked this up, and the average size of a cat flap varies depending on the weight of the cat. But a standard opening typically measures 14 centimetres by 12.
What's that in?
And trying to find the typical size of a chicken is trickier as they're mostly sold in weight. But a good estimate for a standard 2-kilogram bird is 20 to 25 centimetres long, 18 centimetres wide.
So that's too big.
13 centimetres high. So it, maybe it depends on the angle, or maybe the chickens were smaller back in the day.
Do we think that Eugene was really, like, tilted a bit? Maybe I'll get it through the cat flap. Tilted. I don't think he's
maybe they were
that.
Just smaller back in
looks
the day.
It's like he's trying to get the sofa in through my front door.
Maybe he was just a really big fat cat.
That's so what I was thinking.
A huge really cat.
Big fat cat needs a big fat cat flap.
Yes. What's that from? Did you just make it up?
I just made it up.
Wow, like you're scatting, like it's jazz.
But it actually...
Big cat, that, big cat flap.
I think that could be a code phrase for you.
I think it could be. I'm going to write it down. Big cat flap.
Anyway. A mixed reaction for Michael and Eugene on the People's Verdict, including this one from Sharon, read by Matt right now.
Forgiven. Back in the late 80s, our sadly deceased cat brought a large field mushroom in through the cat flap, followed a few days later by a giant Yorkshire pudding. We didn't ask around to see who had lost these items. The naughty creatures keep up your great show. That's weird. Sharon, she didn't... I don't think that could work, could it? You couldn't get a... How's a cat getting hold of a Yorkshire pudding? It's going to collapse by the time they get it home.
Also it's a dead cat, so a dead cat's not going to bring anything to
a dead cat. The cat was dead. I think
some illicit substances have been taken.
Sharon's been taking something there, hasn't she?
I don't think their cat was dead at the time. Yeah. The cat's dead now. It wasn't a ghost cat holding a Yorkshire pudding.
Why would you bring home a mushroom?
No, because it was from someone's dinner table. So,
who eats a mushroom for Sunday dinner?
I don't remember that.
It was a Sunday dinner, and they brought home a field mushroom.
So one day,
I got a mushroom for lunch.
Oh, I tell you what,
you could have it. Maybe it was a stuffed mushroom.
Love a shiitake mushroom. Very good.
I don't think we don't want to go down there.
Like, I'll drink that.
Yorkshire pudding, though.
Moral decrepitude lies that way.
I'm serving that at the Bower meal. mushrooms. Yeah, walk out.
We have a big team meeting, and we're going to be served with field mushrooms
and a Yorkshire pudding.
Well, by a cat that's dead.
That'll be gone by the starter.
I'd rather have a dead cat. Anyway, time to turn our eyes to the parish notice board. Matt, have you found any 5-star reviews?
Well, as luck would have it, yes, I have. Rob Tay Fan says, 5 stars, fantastic podcast, 5 stars every time. The way the team goes off on strange tangents.
We don't do
that. I don't know what they're talking about.
Interesting and hilarious. Christopher James Trapp, real name.
Good
says
name.
5 stars.
Wow, strong.
Likes it in the Sound of Music.
Yeah, the Von Trapp.
Yeah, very much likes it. Sound of Music knowledge. Excellent format. Continuing to entertain after all these years.
All these really long years, guys.
Two of them. Excellent podcast, full of shocking tales needing to be heard. Being a long-time listener, I still find the podcast as funny as ever. Keep up the excellent work, and please don't stop.
One more.
There it is. Louise in Bridgeport says, laughing gas and confessions. Laughing gas and confessions. 5 stars, absolutely. I listen to the superb confessions whilst I'm cleaning at the local dentist, and they often have the same effect as sucking on a pipe full of dental laughing gas.
Really?
Is that what Louise is doing when she's cleaning? I wouldn't admit to that. The predictable guilty and not guilty verdicts of Sister Susie, stroke Holly, and Brother Matt, and the amazing vocal talents of Father Simon make the evening go quicker. Keep up the good work, wonderful work, says Louise in Bridgeport.
Keep up the good wonderful work.
Who's been sucking on the dental laughing gas?
Yeah, well, we're as good as that.
We're as good as dental laughing gas. Do they still do dental laughing gas? I'm not sure. Isn't that from the 60s or something? I don't think they use that anymore, Louise. I don't know what you've been sucking on.
Yeah, well, I think...
let's definitely edit that bit out. Oh, my God. We'll go back to the bit where I said, keep up the wonderful work.
End.
Good Lord. Right.
I would have liked my school dentist to have some laughing gas because... My school dentist didn't believe in anaesthetic.
No, I remember that.
Absolutely. Let's just drill, baby drill. That's what we want. Yeah. And if you said, can I have an anaesthetic? No, I'm just going to go faster. which is not really what you wanted to hear.
No, no. I remember one of our...
I don't think that's allowed.
It's definitely not allowed.
Yes,
there was a presenter we know, I'm not going to name.
Who, is it Richard Allenson?
It was Richard Allenson. Richard Allenson.
Andy Craig.
And Rossi. Kate Thornton. Went to the dentist, and the dentist said, I don't think I'm going to bother with anaesthetic because I've got a tea time. So he was going to play golf. So he said, I don't think I'm going to bother with the tea, with the anaesthetic.
Well, it's, again, not allowed.
Not allowed.
If you're going to do that, then your own choice, it's wrong. But why would you tell the person that you were doing that to? Mm. Wouldn't it be just like a mental note of, I'm not going to use anaesthetic because I want to get the teeth?
Don't blame it on the golf. That's terrible.
Mm. Yeah.
Time to find another dentist, which of course, it's not an easy thing to do.
Did
you have sort of screams coming from your school dentist office then?
Yeah. I think so.
Wow. God, it was dark in the 70s.
I can't believe you had a school dentist. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, I didn't have a school dentist. Obviously, it was a very, very
I would have liked not to have had a school dentist.
No.
It'd be interesting to know if there, dental confessions are always hilarious.
Yes, they are.
Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Susie, what have you selected from the notice board?
Well, I think Matt's going to like this one. I've got an email from Jenny who says, Dear Confessions Compadres, I am an amateur embroiderer and have been meaning to send the attached for ages. To be fair, you've probably forgotten the multiple conversations about spangles from last year. You all thought Matt had made them up and forgotten the word sequins. But here is proof that Matt was right all along. And then she's put a clip of a book that I don't massively understand the title, but it says 53 Forehead Cloth. The reflective qualities of spangles, an early name for sequins, made them a popular choice for early embroiderers, adding definition to textile patterns in candlelight. And then it says credit Edinburgh's National Museum of Scotland. Thanks, Jenny.
Well done, Jenny. What's filing that under Matt was right again.
What's a forehead cloth? He doesn't need any encouraging.
Yeah.
At all. What's a forehead cloth?
Forehead cloth, that's what it's called.
Forehead cloth.
It's pronounced forehead.
I wouldn't call it forehead.
I think
is it?
Everyone listening right now has wondered why you said forehead. It's forehead.
What's this bit?
That's forehead.
Your forehead.
Oh,
what?
My.
Do you say
anyway,
forehead?
It's called forehead cloth. Everyone knows it's forehead cloth.
I think this is a North thing.
Oh, maybe.
Forehead.
Growing up, I heard forehead.
Forehead.
And I assumed it was a Welsh thing, but maybe it's a Northwest thing.
It's an English thing, forehead.
I would always say forehead. My forehead.
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 Yeah.
My forehead.
No, that's forehead. Definitely, yeah.
Forehead. Anyway.
Forehead.
But we've established that I'm right.
So a spangle was an early name for sequins, according
to the forehead cloth people.
That's definitely not a thing.
Can you trust the Edinburgh National Museum of Scotland? I'm not quite sure.
If we can't trust them, who can we trust, Simon?
Yes, that's true.
In these times.
When you need a forehead cloth, that's where I go.
Yeah.
Right. Just nip up to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Can I have a forehead cloth number 53?
Yes,
thank you very much. Linen, silk, metal thread, spangles, England, late 16th century. And they'll go, we know just a thing.
We know, yes.
But I think you'll find it's called a forehead cloth.
They won't say that.
Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. A couple of mentions to Spud Whaley with an underscore, Michelle Liverpool, one word, Janine Moore, and Pam and Polly, who were amongst those who got in touch with the secret code phrase from last week's podcast, which was, of course, poncing about with the buttercream. Matt will have a new secret code phrase at the end of this podcast. Now we get to the sordid side of things, the not-for-broadcast grubby section. Much loved by Mark Knopfler and all those kind of people. Starting with just the letter J, well, yours was a gentle story about when a peaceful aviary life with birds and birdsong goes badly wrong, when a cat causes chaos and a well-meaning intervention leads to a fatal accident, which very rarely get on the show, I have to say. Mm. The aftermath involves a pond, plastic bags, a car boot, a discreet woodland dumping, and a haunting missing cat leaflet days later. It's sincere and remorseful, but far too dark. And too much deadness and death.
So he killed the cat, is that what we're saying?
Involving plastic bags and a car boot. Good grief.
He killed the birds.
Who knows what happened? Who knows what happened?
We don't know what happened.
Let's draw a spangled veil.
A spangled veil. Oh, right, yes.
Forehead cloth.
Take the cloth off your forehead.
Yeah.
And drape it over.
Yeah. Good thing.
All the dead animals that have been dumped in the forest. Okay, thanks.
No, in the pond.
No, it was scooped out of the pond.
Oh.
Who scooped out of the pond?
They put it in the pond?
How did they get in?
You can't really bury something in a pond.
If you're dead, you can't skip out of a pond, can you?
No.
No, they scooped them out of the pond.
Why would you scoop it out of the pond?
Because you didn't. They didn't realise there was a pond there.
I didn't realise there was a pond there. Were they doing this at night?
So they knocked over the cat with their car in the pond.
No, from a so the. They knocked. The cat was on a roof.
I might as well just
the cat was on a roof. You may as well. So the cat was on a roof. It killed all of the birds.
Hot in roof.
Elizabeth Taylor, very good film. And Steve McQueen. No, anyway,
fell into a pond.
They threw the cat into a pond.
No, the cat fell into a pond.
Elizabeth Taylor in the pond.
Elizabeth Taylor in the bird.
Cat was trying to get the birds on a roof. Scared the cat. Cat fell off the roof into next door's garden. Splash.
With the lead piping.
Into the pond.
Yes.
Oh. And then the cat died in the pond.
Yeah. But we don't know. We're drawing a veil.
We don't know.
We're distracted by the spangles.
Yes.
This is dark.
We don't know.
Wow. Also, Barry, you confessed to fixing a supposedly fair staff drawer to quietly get rid of your most accident-prone engineer. That sounds dark. All in the hope of securing a promotion. It's probably illegal. So that alone is enough for it to make it straight into the bin. While the office deception, hat-swapping and decades of guilt are bad enough, you also had a really unfortunate nickname for your colleague that keeps it firmly off the radio.
Oh, really? Right, OK.
I don't know what it was.
So what was he doing to his... He was swapping his hat.
What was the staff draw?
Yeah. He's got a staff draw.
But he's finished off someone.
Swapped his hat.
In the pond.
I think we've all been eating those field mushrooms, haven't we, with the giant Yorkshire pudding. None of this is making any sense this week at all. Dear, oh dear.
Anyway, back to the confessions that made it onto the show. With Anon Stupid's confession, Shoot and Gallery, a Shakin' Stevens reference, as I'm sure you've noticed.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession comes when it's signed Anon Stupid.
Oh.
So it's an anonymous email, anonymously stupid, as very high opinion of himself. Simon and the team, I need to take you back to the summer of 1992. I was a mere 23 years old and had just completed a law degree. It was 3 years of hard graft, and as a treat, my sister and brother-in-law decided to treat me to a holiday with them to Spain.
Oh.
Very nice.
Nice.
The problem with being a 23-year-old graduate was that I thought I knew everything in life. And as a potential future lawyer, I also thought I had to ensure that I was refined in thought, word, and deed. So even a forthcoming trip to Lloret de Mar with my sister, I had to ensure I began my request for refinement as a future lawyer in earnest. Not quite sure how you go on a holiday to Spain trying to be refined. But anyway, this is precisely what Anon Stupid did. The problem was, Father Simon, I had never been abroad before in my life. So there were certain parts of the holiday which exposed my total naivety to the world. First night in a nice restaurant, my sister and brother-in-law decided to order themselves steak and chips. I really fancied that secretly, but thought, no, I need to be more refined. And as I scanned the menu, decided to order the fish platter, not knowing at all what it was, but it sounded posh and refined and the type of food a future lawyer would be ordering.
Of course they would, yeah.
I mean, Anon really is stupid.
Yeah.
To my horror, as the juicy steaks were brought out for my family, I looked down at the fish platter, expecting well-prepared Findus-like cod in butter sauce or fish fingers or fish cakes or rissoles or something. I looked down at the fish platter and, although cooked, none of it had been deboned and the fish heads had not been removed. And all I could see were 20 fish eyes staring back at me. As I glimpsed at my sister, she was desperately trying not to laugh as she devoured her juicy steak. My appetite disappeared quickly. That is the kind of fish platter that you would get in Spain.
Yes, you would. Yeah.
That's
yeah,
exactly what you would expect.
Correct, yeah.
If you knew anything about Spain
or
indeed fish platters, but a non-stupid did not. Father Simon, the next day when we visited the local fair that had come into the resort, it had the usual fairgrounds and rides and stalls. The only difference was that nothing was in English. I mean, imagine.
What? Surprise.
I decided to have a go and try my luck at the shooting range. Bear in mind, I had not done this in my life before either. But I wanted to prove to my brother-in-law, who was watching, that I was not a complete idiot.
After the fish thing,
I'll show him, I thought. and I paid the stall attendant and I took aim at the first target. Bang went the gun. Yes, I got it. I hit the target. Yes. Second target. Bang. Oh, I got that one as well. Fantastic. My confidence was growing stronger and stronger. It was when I hit the third target with a bang that I heard in broken English in a frantic tone. No, how would you say stop, stop, stop in Spanish?
Bada, bada, bada.
Say, okay, do that again.
Bada, bada, bada.
But now kind of angry.
Bada, bada, bada.
Okay. Father Simon, it was pointed out to me by the enraged stall holder that I was not supposed to be shooting at the main prizes.
Oh, they're not the prizes.
So the broken bottles of whiskey, gin and vodka that lay strewn across the floor were not meant to be the targets. And the very angry man who was shouting...
Bada, bada, bada.
Insisted rightly that we paid for all the damage that I had stupidly caused. I was meant to shoot at the tiny matchsticks that I could hardly see, which were not as obvious as the litre bottles of spirits that I had destroyed with my weaponry. So, Father Simon, I ask for forgiveness for being the most stupid 23-year-old that ever visited Spain. And for being pretentious and ordering the fish platter, and most of all for thinking I was a master marksman at the rifle range, when in fact I was just a bumbling idiot whose trip to Lloret de Mar cost me a lot more than I bargained for. It sounds as though a non-stupid, this has stayed with him somewhat.
It has.
And
little, yeah,
that he was taken down a peg or two, as they say in Spain. Sister Susie, what do you say to a non-stupid?
Well, I think you know, he's named himself correctly there, because he does sound like he's a bit stupid, really, isn't he? Like, if you go to a restaurant, just eat what you want, is what I'm going to say. If you want steak, just have steak. Don't feel like you have to eat in a certain way to start with. And you can't be surprised that the fair had all the signs in Spanish when you were in Spain.
Yes, so fair point.
But shooting booze bottles, you shoot, what a waste of alcohol, what a waste of booze, and they're not forgiven from
me. How dumb do you have to be actually aiming at the prizes?
Yeah.
At least there weren't fish in plastic bags. That would have been even worse.
Brother Matthew,
what are you saying to anon-stupid?
I'm going to forgive. Is it a crime to try to want to be a bit more sophisticated when you're on holiday? No, it's not. That's all he wanted. He just wanted to look cool and refined on Lloret de Mar. No, it wasn't a great idea to order the fish platter, but that's okay. And also, what's this stall doing where you can only win prizes by shooting a matchstick? No one's shooting a matchstick. You've got to be professional to be able to do that.
It's all rigged, Matt.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it is. So for those reasons, I'm going to forgive.
Saint or sinner? Find them all on Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast.
How dumb do you have to be to think that, you know, you're abroad, it says fish platter, and you're going to get Findus fish in a bag sauce like you have at the supermarket.
But he was probably used to what he got at home, and he was trying to expand his palate, like we do with Nige, you know. He sometimes serves stuff that
he's 23, he's a grown-up, and he's abroad. Yes. Why would you think it's going to be a Findus fish in a bag?
Well, it might have been. It was the 1980s, wasn't it?
So I don't think Spain has ever served that kind of food.
Fish in a bag?
Fish in a bag from Findus.
Fish in a bag, yes.
What is that? Sorry.
Fish in a bag.
Basically, you opened the box, and there was a plastic bag inside, with a bit of fish in sauce.
Yes.
And then you tore open the bag, you put it in a saucepan, heated it up, and there it was.
Yeah. Okay, was it like a whole fish or bits?
No, just bits.
Did you boil it in the bag?
You boiled it. So you boiled it in the water, and you put the bag in the water, still sealed.
Yeah.
And it then did
boily,
its
boily,
thing.
Boily, boily, boily.
And then after 5 minutes, you open up the bag with your scissors and pour, and it was awful.
And it was really hot.
You burn your hands.
And then go out and get some chips.
Is that what you did?
Yeah, oh my God,
every night. And you hate fish as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Why would you bother?
The lesson there is don't order the fish platter for any reason.
No, not when there's steak.
Anyway, he's a fool. So that I think we've established that. Still to come, we're driving on the streets of Saudi Arabia with Professor Pat Pending's confession, the Fender Bender 500. Still to come, we're driving on the streets of Saudi Arabia with Professor Pat Pending's confession, the Fender Bender 500. But first, the accidental chef has this confession. Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Talking heads.
Thank you.
Confess all. Simon Mayo's Confessions podcast.
Today's confession comes from, it's signed, The Accidental Chef.
Okay.
That's no names, just The Accidental Chef. Father Simon, forgive me, for I have sinned against culinary diplomacy and possibly the entire French nation.
Ooh.
Well, it all started when France and the UK were locked in a fierce battle to host the Olympic Games.
Oh, yes, of course, yes.
At work, the rivalry was intense. My French colleague, let's call him Eric, was very French. Proud, passionate, and absolutely convinced that France would win, which was not a bad viewpoint given that they were considered strong favourites. He was in full agreement when their French Prime Minister made that infamous comment about Scottish food, muttering multiple times that he wouldn't serve most of our dishes to his dog. Eric said he speaks the truth. Our Prime Minister, your food is terrible. That's how he said it.
Very French.
Well, as you know, the UK won. Zut alors, sacré bleu, and so on.
Yeah.
I'm afraid we didn't hold back our glee when the results were announced. Not at all in keeping with the class of Seb Coe, Denise Lewis and Co. And Eric looked genuinely crestfallen. In a moment of weakness and in a spirit of reconciliation, aligned with the Olympic spirit, or maybe a bit of mischief, we invited him to my flat for dinner. We told him it would be a proper British meal, and it was, sort of. On the table, we served haggis alongside cheap pork pie.
Yes.
Humble pie. Mm-hmm. A selection of low-grade, vaguely out-of-date cheese from our fridge, hard cheese, and perfectly decent bunches of grapes, sour grapes.
Ah!
We served humble pie, hard cheese, and sour grapes. We quickly explained the joke, thinking he'd laugh, nibble politely, and leave most of it untouched so we could go out and have something more appetizing. But Eric, and being French, took it literally and as a matter of national honor. He announced that he would finish every last bite. I will eat every last bite.
He said, just like that.
At first, he tackled the pork pie with confidence, but by the time he reached the haggis, never an easy sell in my opinion, his enthusiasm began to falter. Each forkful seemed to take longer than the last. His smile faded into a grimace, his conversation slowed, and beads of sweat began to form on his forehead. J'ai perdu mon âme, he would say. I've lost myself.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When he moved on to the grapes, he seemed relieved but ended up chewing them like bullets. And by the time he reached the cheese, he looked like a man climbing Everest without oxygen. His face turned a shade of green no Frenchman should ever wear. And his eyes had that distant look of someone questioning all their life choices. By the end, he looked like he'd lost more than just the Olympic bid. More than his French pride, it seemed he'd lost part of his culinary soul, never to return. Tout est perdu. I think you're overselling it, accidental chef, by the way. Simon, I confess, I made a Frenchman eat humble pie, literally, and sour grapes and hard cheese. Ha ha! He left that night a broken man, and I'm not sure he ever forgave me, or Scotland, for that matter. And so, Father Simon, to be honest, I don't seek forgiveness for lauding our victory, nor for serving poorly cooked and vaguely out-of-date food to a friend. No, my true sin was far greater. I gravely offended and permanently altered a sophisticated, delicate French palate, one that may well never recover. I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think you're overselling your crime. But yeah, it was clearly an offensive thing to do because he was a man suffering and ashamed of what had happened. And you made him feel a whole lot worse. Here's Sister Susie with the authoritative word.
Well, I do think he was kind of over-egging his thing at the end. But I just think, in general, a bit mean is what I'm going to say. I don't think he needed. If you invite someone to dinner, regardless of the circumstances, just what are you serving him that rubbish for? And I just think, even if it was a joke, it's just not nice. So I'm not going to forgive.
Not nice, but quite funny, I think.
Yes, I thought so. I mean, I'm going to forgive. It was a metaphor, wasn't it, Eric? You're not supposed to eat them. It was, just the hard cheese and the sour grapes and all of that. You're just supposed to giggle along and then leave. You'd think a Frenchman would understand a metaphor. Clearly not.
Why would you think that?
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Exactly, good point. So I'm definitely going to forgive. I remember the front page from the French newspapers when London won the Olympics. Pourquoi Londres, they said. And the answer is because we had the better bid, Jean-Philippe. Right. So for those reasons, I'm going to forgive.
Qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa.
Hilarious revelations from a new generation of sinners.
Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Today's confession, for reasons that will become apparent, comes from Professor Pat Pending. Father Simon, this is a Wacky Races reference.
Oh, right.
Father Simon, Brother Matt, Sister Susie and Holly, my name is Chris. Oh, hang on.
Not Chris.
My name is Professor Pat Pending.
Pat Pending.
And I wish to seek forgiveness for an act of friendliness, which led to a very, very unexpected series of consequences. My confession dates back 10 or more years to when a colleague and I were seconded to work in the Middle East for 16 months. We'd worked there previously, but only on two short trips of a week at a time, and each time we'd been chauffeured around the perilous roads of Saudi Arabia's capital city while staying in some very nice hotels. As this trip was to be for a significantly longer period, split into blocks of 10 to 12 weeks at a time, we were to be living in a Western compound and required to drive ourselves in a company-supplied SUV, a vehicle which we were grateful for as it provided a great degree of safety, as you can imagine. Being conscientious and law-abiding people, my colleague and I did our homework before arriving, studying the Saudi traffic laws in detail and also researching local road use customs to ensure we stayed safe. We also learned some basic words in Arabic, and I even grew my moustache bigger and bushier than normal because apparently it made you look trustworthy.
Oh!
So, something to consider.
Good work.
Okay. Now, having been in the country before, we were all well aware that driving on Saudi roads, particularly in the area of Riyadh, was a challenging and sometimes hazardous activity. For example, a three-lane dual carriageway would regularly accommodate five cars abreast on each side, with the lines being nothing more than a suggestion as to where to position your vehicle on the road.
Oh my goodness.
Use of indicators widely emitted and a casual wave of the hand was deemed sufficient compensation for cutting someone up. One law that everyone observed was that if your car's nose is ahead of another, you have priority and you can just do what you want. In general, it worked very well. Scary, but efficient. John and I were virtually... my colleague and I were virtually paranoid and thus drove with extreme care at all times.
Yeah.
I should have paid more attention. Mm. So to the event in question, it was our third day in the country and my first drive to work in the morning rush hour. With John's help, we navigated successfully along the route and finally started along the perilous final road to our destination. Virtually all road junctions in the area are controlled by traffic lights, with cars stopping suddenly due to the offence of driving through a red light being observed strictly and the penalty for not stopping being harsh and rigidly enforced. The traffic lights are positioned well back from the junction, and it was usual for the first three cars in each lane to drive past the lights and stop just before the intersecting road. So therefore you cannot see the lights from where
of course. Yeah.
We're about six cars back in the middle lane and we waited patiently for our turn to move. I looked to my right and I recognised a man who we'll call Mac that we'd seen the day before, sat in the car, also waiting. Being a friendly sort of chap and keen to make friends, I decided to attract his attention and wave a good morning. And then I beeped my horn twice and waved in his direction. And what happened next has haunted me ever since. And I rarely ever touch a vehicle's horn unless absolutely necessary. You see, Father Simon, unbeknownst to us at the time, the cars which stopped behind the lights beeped their horns as
of
a courtesy
course.
To inform the drivers in front of them that the lights had changed to green. And it was now safe to proceed. Along with violent braking at traffic lights came violent acceleration away from them. But of course the lights had not changed and a huge stream of traffic was still coming from our left as their lights were green and it was their turn to go. The drivers in pole positions hit their accelerators and sped forward, only to meet the other traffic still coming at them. The scene was like something out of Wacky Races, ha-ha, with cars going in every direction possible, tyres screeching, several vehicles mounting the curbs to avoid each other. 30 seconds seemed like hours as we watched on in horror. Chaos, carnage, mayhem. All the cars waiting behind the lights had stayed put, and when the lights finally did change, they proceeded as if nothing had happened. The carnage didn't exist. Two police officers at a checkpoint by the side of the road paid absolutely no attention to the scene that I had caused and casually waved us through. I think my moustache might have helped at that point, as I did look particularly trustworthy that morning.
Yeah,
it's definitely the moustache.
I kept it until we finally left the country for good. I have to say that the inhabitants of the country we encountered were really nice and friendly people. We had a great time. So I seek forgiveness for my naive gesture of friendliness, which almost led to a multi-car pile-up and carnage on an extremely busy road in a foreign country. And it was all definitely my fault, even though I was just trying to be friendly.
Just trying, wasn't
it? Just trying to be friendly, as I was just trying to segue seamlessly from one piece of music.
And it worked.
Yep.
It was
so smooth.
I think so. Carnage and mayhem applies there as well. Anyway, I mean, Professor Pat Pending was doing his best. It was just that it was a bit rubbish.
Yeah, he was doing his best. But it was also, you know, I think he said the first day he was doing this proper journey. So if it's your first day doing the proper journey, you need to be concentrating on what you're doing. You need to be looking at the road. You need to be looking at the traffic lights. Not cooey, hello, to your mate over there. Yeah, it's just, I hear what you're saying. He's just trying to be friendly. He's just trying to make friends. But that was not the time or the place. He should have been concentrating on what he was doing. And it's a good job. No one got hurt. So,
well, I also think it's quite interesting that the police didn't care.
Yes.
Okay, no, it's fine,
tells
whatever.
Quite a lot.
Brother Matthew.
Yes, I mean, Pat was doing his best, wasn't he? He was growing the moustache and he'd learnt all the rules, hadn't he? And it wasn't his fault, really. I mean, you've got to question the system, really. This system of going past the traffic lights and then relying on
it's
people behind
silly,
you
isn't it?
To beep their horns. Maybe that's not a great system. And he showed everyone in Saudi Arabia that it wasn't a great system by showing the flaws in
so
that system.
So he's pointing the way.
So, yes, he's pointing the way, isn't he, with his moustache. Not that the police were that bothered. So yes, I'm gonna forgive.
Confess all. Simon Mayo's Confessions Podcast.
In the flaws of another country's laws, faulty traffic lights is not something that's been discussed.
No, it hasn't,
much.
But it should be, shouldn't it?
I think you've lit the way there.
I have, yes. Yeah, once again.
Mostly forgiveness on the people's verdict, apart from this one.
And Will in Staffordshire says, not forgiven. Mustaches don't warrant forgiveness on any occasion. Besides, his bushy moustache probably affected his vision. Not sure he knows how moustaches work.
No.
But anyway, yes.
That would have,
good point, Will.
I think they're eyebrows you're thinking of. How big is this moustache? What
it would need to be big, wouldn't it? Yes.
But really high up, maybe. Maybe the end.
Do they grow up? Maybe they do.
They can. They go, you can grow, twiddle grow, them. Grow,
maybe abroad they do.
Abroad?
It's a gravity thing.
You know what they're like with a fish in a bag?
I'm not into a moustache.
Are you not?
No.
Okay.
Just throwing that one out there.
I don't think it would suit you particularly. You know Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water album?
I am familiar.
Paul Simon stands behind Art Garfunkel.
Yes.
If you put your finger over Art Garfunkel's face, it looks as though Paul Simon has just got this enormous droopy moustache, which is Art Garfunkel's hair, basically.
Oh, because he's stood right behind him.
Yes.
Oh, right,
it's a really kind of neat trick. You can amaze your friends. You can invite them round for a party. Look at this trick, you can say.
Has anyone got a copy of Bridge Over? No, you haven't. Oh, right. Because it would be great if you did.
Anyway, that brings... if you've got a moustache-based confession, I think Holly would like that particularly.
Yes.
Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. That's the end of the show. If you have a tale to tell, you know where to send it. Over to Brother Matthew for this week's secret code phrase.
Yes, the secret code phrase this week is cat flap and the mushrooms. Cat flap and the mushrooms.
If you've made it this far, you can post this week's code phrase, which you've just heard unveiled, on Threads or Blue Sky or even Instagram. At Mr. Simon Mayo on Threads and Instagram, or Simon Mayo on Blue Sky, or you can find Matt on the Filth channel. Remember to leave us a 5-star review, and of course, as we head into the season of brighter evenings...
Yes, they're coming, aren't they?
Don't forget to tell your friends about the Confessions podcast. Until then, from the pub, Sister Susie says...
Bye-bye.
From the tack cupboard, Sister Holly says...
Hasta la vista, baby.
And from his gutter, Brother Matthew says...
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening.
Simon Mayo's Confessions. Want to confess? Simon Mayo would love to hear your story. He may even keep it to himself.
He definitely won't keep it to himself.
Send gory details, please, to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk.
Read by me right now.
Off you go.
There I go.
There you go. See the section where it says
okay.
Matt.
The script.
Here we go. Yes. Okay.